A singer and a songwriter who's in the Hall of Fame twice as a Bird and as a member of Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, David Crosby is our guest today. He and his extraordinary band filling the space. The band leader and the producer of Crosby's new solo album is Michael League, the leader of the instrumental band Snarky Puppy. So much history and so much music, we'll get to as much of it as we can. Lighthouse is his fifth solo album. He released his first, If I Could Only Remember My Name, in 1971. It is very much a collaboration between Crosby and League. And I asked the lifelong Los Angelino if collaboration was a really important value in music to him.
Yes. The first time that I really realized, my mom took me to hear a symphony orchestra. And when they started, I was sitting right in front of them, and it was so powerful. And I realized it had to do with all those arms sawing away together and playing together, and I realized that's what made it so big and magical. And so from that, I always loved being in a group and working with other people. Harmony, just, I love it. You know, I probably listened to too much classical music when I was a kid, and that stuck it in there too.
Yeah. We interviewed Michael and Snarky Puppy a while ago, and that's when I know you worked on a song with them. But this collaboration with Michael is all you're doing, right? You called him?
Well, no, he called me, but it was my doing. What happened is I heard Snarky Puppy, and they are an exceptionally fine band of miscreants, and they do a great job. And the music really got me, and so I started tweeting about them, you know, saying, you know, they look funny, but they really can play. Michael heard about it. Somebody's mom called somebody and said, hey, there's a guy on the internet talking about you. And so Mike and I wound up on the phone together. He was in Singapore, and he asked me if I would do their benefit record that they do, you know, about once a year. They do a thing called a family dinner, and it was really good the first time, so I volunteered to do the second one. I went there, and that's where I met Becca and Michelle, because they were on that same record, and they both impressed the hell out of me, totally. And Mike was pretty good, too. And so we wound up working together on the record. There's a song at the end of the record that both of the girls sang on. Becca and I wrote it, and when Mike and I listened to it, we said, geez, we wish we could take that on the road, and then we did.
And you're sort of, we're talking to you here in December, and you've been on out for quite a while.
Yeah, since 1984. Really.
So this darn well better sound good.
It better, by this time, yeah.
You mentioned wanting to do Guinevere and a song I've always loved. And we've talked actually before about it, about the verses being about three women, Christine Hinton and Joni and an unnamed third person.
Yes.
But I've just been listening to it over and over a bunch. And there seems to me, and even beyond the guitar tunings, a really Joni Mitchell influence on the way this song kind of put together. Did you think of it that way?
No. Ah. Nice guess, but no. actually, I wrote it, you know, before I started going with Joni. Mm-hmm. And she influenced me tremendously anyway, even if it wasn't this song, because she's, you know, probably the greatest singer-songwriter of our times. You know, I produced her first record, and we were an item for a while, and it was pretty daunting. And, you know, I'd write a song and say, hi, listen to this. And she'd come back with three that were better. And I would kind of shrivel up and kind of crawl into a corner. But she did teach me a lot of stuff about tunings. She and Michael Hedges are probably the two leading tuning experts in the world, you know.
Right.
Or were.
Well, okay, so I got that one wrong, but I'm going to forge on.
No, you should. Yeah.
You are you're a guy who back in the day wore velvet cloaks, and this song has kind of a bit of a medieval with m'lady feel to it, that thing. It got me thinking back to a Bird song you wrote called Renaissance Fair, which is totally involved in that kind of era. Did that have some kind of an attraction to you, or is there any relationship between those two songs?
Yeah, there is. I was attracted to that era of music anyway because of the town crier, you know, troubadour part of our gig is descended from there, you know. And so I've always liked that kind of music anyway. And I had heard Simon and Garfunkel, and I wanted to be like them.
All by yourself.
All by myself. I can do that. I'm not just a schizophrenic. I'm a multi-phrenic.
Well, you mentioned wanting to do it. I can't imagine. It doesn't sound great with these players and these harmonies.
Keep your fingers crossed, man.
All right. Guinevere, a gorgeous version by this group that is with us today, Michelle Willis, Becca Stevens, Michael League, and Mr. David Crosby. That sounded great. Your voice is as good as it's ever been. I mean, what gives?
I'm baffled myself, man. I have no idea. I did everything wrong. It shouldn't be there. I should be, hi, children. Hello from Santa. I don't understand it. You know, all I can do is be grateful.
And do you do anything? Do you do exercises?
Well, there's some secret rock star stuff that I can't tell you. Yeah. But yeah. No, I don't do, you know, I don't smoke cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And until I've never drunk whiskey before, but recently somebody who shall remain nameless.
I'm so sorry.
I never meant to do that. No, I don't, you know, I don't know. I'm just grateful that I can do it. It's fun because we don't do stuff ever really quite the same exactly. You know, and whenever I'm singing a lead part, I it's like having your own rocket ship. You just go, you know, and you go, ooh, where's it going tonight? Whoopee! Mm-hmm. It's a lot of fun. But I don't have an explanation. I don't have a logical explanation for you.
Well, the other thing that you should be slowing down on is songwriting, and instead you're speeding up. I mean, we talked to you, a couple years ago, and then this, wham, nine great new songs, and I bet you have more, but... is that another thing you have to just shake your head at and say, thank God? Or
yes, and thank you, God. She's a really nice woman, God. I like her a lot. The truth is, I used to write in little bits, little surges, and then I'd have a blank space, and then I'd have another two or three songs. But I've been really happy the last couple of years, and it started right around that time doing that one with James. He and I write really well together. Michael and I write really well together. We wrote three of the songs on this record in the first 3 days we were together.
Wow.
And now recently I've found that I can write with Becca also. We
write pretty good.
And so, you know, I do like writing with other people because if you look at it, it's like having a palette of colors. If you write with somebody else, you've got 10 more colors. Makes a better painting. They always think of something you didn't. It's fun.
The other thing, part of writing, the big part for you is being a wordsmith and getting things to sound right. And that's one of the things that's kind of cool. You mentioned doing a song called The S Below. And I love these new songs because they actually are about a specific thing, but you're never too direct about it. And that's what the best songs are like that. And people have trouble with that, you know, doing that. And you all seem to have done a really good job. How did you divide it up, you and Michael?
It's line by line, note by note. It's completely intermixed. Michael writes words as well or better than I do, and he writes music really well. And we just get in a room together with a guitar and some paper, and stuff happens.
For that first writing session, of course, you know, going to David Crosby's house to hang out with one of the greatest lyricists of...
Oh, stop.
No, I mean, you know, it was intimidating for me because I'm in an instrumental band, and lyric writing is not a thing that people associate with me with, so... We went in and we basically said, well, you know, we've got these pieces of music that David has written with no lyrics. We have these sets of lyrics with no music. And then we have some things that are kind of a little bit of lyrics and a little bit of music. And so I told him, well, we could take three approaches. I could fill in the lyrical gaps on your musical pieces. I could fill in the musical gaps on your lyrical pieces, et cetera. And I said, let's start with the one that's least likely to work, which is me writing lyrics to your music. And that's kind of... The way it worked is we just chose a topic and I said, what do you think? And he did a stream of consciousness ramble for 3 or 4 pages and it was like gold.
It works. Yeah. It's an odd chemistry, but it does really work. I don't know why other people don't do it more. I think maybe they want the publishing or they want the glory or something. But I've found 3 or 4 people that I can really write with, and I'm working on expanding my repertoire. He said, looking at Michelle. I do like it a lot. I still, you know, write songs by myself, but I love writing, man. It's a joy. If you don't have a song in the first place that you can sit down and sing to somebody and make them feel something, then you don't have the, what do they call it in poker? The jacks are better, the openers, the beginning necessary, you know, crystal of essential stuff. That's the key is the song.
Well, Who came up with the major idea for the Yes Below? Because it's got this idea of us being eternally alone kind of at the center of it.
Well, Michael, because he's been eternally alone. He complains about it all the time, actually.
Well, you know, we were talking a lot about... we were talking quite a bit about, like, Carl Sagan and Neil deGrasse Tyson, and David and I were talking about that, and we were kind of just... It was pretty mutual. I mean, I think I floated the idea, but then, of course... The way that most of the writing did is I would float an idea and then David would just take it 80 yards down the field, you know. And
or the other way around.
With that song specifically, I think what David and I were going for is kind of, you know, when you look out into space and you see all of these stars, they're all in orbit and they're all in motion, but they never get near each other. You know, they always stay the same kind of distance apart or relatively the same distance apart from each other. And it's the same thing with people, you know. We go through the world and we're walking down the streets of New York City surrounded by people, but you can still be so alone. And so I think it's just kind of that the parallel between the kind of celestial sense of loneliness and the kind of earthly kind.
So that's what you meant.
That's what it's about.
The lyrics.
That's what it's about.
Weird.
Wow. Not we are baffled. We are impressed.
Well, it's a
no. That was a pretty good explanation.
That's good. That's good. That's what I got out of it, actually. So it works. So this is the Yes Below.
A billion burning sun calmly do as they did before, like me and you sitting in their place. Bound at years apart, stubborn as we are, with matters of the heart. Science, God, and you all agree we've become something we weren't meant to be. Paths run parallel, hearing up above, distance held by hearts afraid to open up. Oh,
The Us Below. That is from the new album called Lighthouse from David Crosby. We have more with his amazing band, including a reworked version of Woodstock, coming up on The World Cafe. More with David Crosby and his band in our studio. He has a new solo album produced by Michael League of Snarky Puppy called Lighthouse. And I mentioned to the Hall of Famer that the songs on the new album have kind of the same vibe as his first solo album back in 1971. And I asked if that was conscious.
It was kind of on purpose. You know, I thought when I went to Mike and asked him to produce this thing, I thought it's like getting a master craftsman who has a gigantic toolbox, namely the band, which is a bunch, like 14 great players of every kind. And I sort of said that to Mike, and he said, well, it's not quite what I had in mind, but he said, I really liked your first solo record, the If I Could Only Remember My Name one, and I'd like to go that direction, do, you know, acoustic guitars and intricate stuff and big vocal stacks. And, of course, that's right in my wheelhouse. That's exactly where I live. So I said, okay.
That was a special moment in your life. You almost did that first album. You almost, from everything I read about it, you almost had to make it. You were not in a great place.
No, I was in a terrible place. Yeah. But I... You know, music's a lifting force, man, and it lifted me, and it's the only place that I could exist right then was in the studio. I went any place else, I'd start crying and, you know, be all down. But in the studio, the music would, you know, I mean, if somebody puts people here to do specific things, they put me here to do that. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm doing it, I'm a pretty happy guy, and that's how that record doesn't sound sad at all. It sounds, you know, kind of uplifting. So anyway, that's how we wound up here.
I wanted to just touch on the idea of drugs as a creative force, because you had a pretty good run as a songwriter in the 60s and 70s, and of course drugs were ubiquitous. Looking back from your wise and sober perspective, what do you think about how drugs affect creativity?
I think that they're terrible for it.
Really?
The idea that they help your creativity is utter nonsense. You can draw a graph very clearly of my drug use, and as the drug use line goes up, the writing line goes down, and they cross at a certain point until I stop writing. Okay? And then I go to prison, which is not a good way to kick drugs. Trust me, ladies and gentlemen. And then I get sober, and bang, all of a sudden the songwriting line starts climbing, and it's been climbing ever since. I can only draw one conclusion from that. I think if I had a regret in my life, and I do, the largest one is wasting the time that I spent wasted. I put so much time and energy into being nothing, you know, doing nothing. And I could have been doing this. So I'm completely opposed to the idea of at least hard drugs. I don't think smoking a joint hurts anybody. But I don't do it if I got stuff to do, I can tell you that.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually have stuff to do.
Well, there's a song in this new one called By the Light of Common Day, and you can really read it as a song about what you were just saying.
It is about that. It's about where do we get this magical stuff from that comes to us, because we're all writers, and we live for it. And we're all pretty good. And I love this set of words. The last verse is like one of my favorite things I ever wrote. And Becca and I have decided that we are going to write more. Mm-hmm. We've already written one more that's really terrific, he said modestly. If it gives you a glimpse into how we feel about being visited by the muse, then good. That's a good thing.
And this is the one that you all got to sing on the album together. So,
mm-hmm,
so.
Yeah, when we listened to it, we said, oh, who are those girls? Let me think. We need those girls. Mikey, we need to convince those girls to go out with us. We had to beg and plead, but they did it.
And here they are. So you want to do that one, by the way?
Sure, yeah.
Comment A.
By the light of common day, things look different than they did in the starlit dark. dark was warm and clouded. It was easy to deceive yourself and those around you in the work. To say the craziness of pain, the spreading of the stain, is exactly where you gain the spark to make it. As if being happy isn't quite enough, somehow I needed to make it rough, rough enough to break
yours. Raise yours. Raise yours.
That's By the Light of Common Day. Gorgeous, gorgeous reading of that from our guest, David Crosby. And big shout-outs to Michelle Willis and Becca Stevens for gorgeous vocals on that as well.
And Mike League.
Well, we'll put Michael in there. Just wanted to give, as Cros said, the girls a shout-out.
That's the first time I've worked with female voices.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's a little intimidating because they got a lot more on the top end than we do, man. I mean, way more.
When you go out with this tour, obviously you want people to hear Lighthouse, but people come to hear a lot of your older stuff too. And is that fun to rearrange things for this new band?
Very much so. Yeah, we've taken some of the ones that I loved the most off of that first solo record and out of other parts of my life and. They've blessed them with a completely new arrangement and really doing new stuff, man, is breath of life. It just invigorates the whole process, and I really love it. There are, you know, the occasional person that comes to one of these concerts and goes, "Hey, Dave, play Almost Cut My Hair." And I go, no, because I'm tired of that.
Yeah,
I'm tired of doing that, and I love doing this. This is exciting to me, man. I get to the end of that song right there just now, and I get shivers because it's like, good, we did it, and I love it.
I think I know the answer to this one, but do you yourself listen to any of your older music or other older music?
No.
Yeah.
I generally don't. I'm proud of the work that I did. I'm proud of the work in The Byrds. I'm proud of the work in Crosby, Stills, and Nash, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, CPR, all the other, you know, things. I'm proud of that work. It's good work. But mostly my consciousness is about what do I have to do today and how to do it right and what could I do tomorrow, what should I do, what do I need to do tomorrow, and what might I be able to do next week and what would I like to do next year. That's really where my whole focus is. And I think that's pretty much how we all do our lives. You know, I don't concentrate on that stuff. There is a body of material there that we can raid at will, you know, and... You know, there's, but no, I don't look back hardly at all.
Well, that said, I heard you had a new version of Woodstock, a new things that you've been working out.
Yeah.
I'm interested. Well, can we talk about Joni for just a second?
Absolutely.
Can you give us an update on how she is and how she's recovering from?
Well, she took a big hit, you know, but she's a very strong woman. And I would bet on her. I think she will make it back as far as she wants to make it back. I think that she's, without question, the greatest living songwriter and singer of our times. I don't think any of us would argue about that. Nope. And I love her. So, you know, I'm going to believe in her.
Well, let's add musician to that because what she...
Yeah, fantastic musician.
Just, you know... We're not just talking about guitar tunings here. We're talking about a lot of different things.
She's a brilliant musician. Yeah. That actually, I think when they look back in 100 years and they say, well, who was the best? It'll be between her and old Weird Bob. Bob's probably one of the great poets of our times, you know, certainly. But she's way better musician and singer. And I learned a lot from her, so.
Well, Woodstock, her song, your version?
Yeah, this is probably the fourth or fifth version of this song that I've heard. You know, she had a version. Stephen listened to it, said, ah, hell, I can make a rock and roll song out of that. And so he did. And we had a hit with it. And it was good. It was a good rock and roll song. Mm-hmm. Her version is completely different. There are a couple of others, you know, in between. And then one day when I was fooling around with a tuning on the guitar, I found another way through the chorus and really sort of through the whole song. And I was trying to learn it. To redo it for this band, and I couldn't figure out what I did. And I said, Becca, help me, Becca. And she did. She figured it out. So she plays it because she's really a good player. It's our surprise package that we end the show with every night. It's really, really fun. People freak out when we do it.
I'm prepared to freak out.
Be prepared to freak out. Prepare to freak out. Yeah. All you in the back row, prepare to freak out.
came upon a child of God. He was walking along the road. I asked him, where was he going? And this he told me. Well, I'm going down to Yasker's farm. Gonna join in a rock and roll band. Gonna get back to the land that set my soul free. We are stardust. We are golden. And we've got to get ourselves back to the garden.
Well, then can I walk beside you? I have come here to lose the small.
Absolutely gorgeous version of Woodstock from David Crosby and this incredible band with Michael Leake, Becca Stevenson, Michelle Willis. You got to name this band, David. I mean, is it the Lighthouse Band?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we've been calling it. But, I mean, you know, bunch of miscreants is good, or, you know, escapees.
Thank you. This has been a pure pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man. It's been good for us, too.
It's a great band.
David Crosby, an extraordinary session. We're putting it up on our website at worldcafe.npr.org. And thanks to David and his band for spending time with us on the World Cafe, which is supported in part by Progressive Insurance, with insurance for cars, home, boat, motorcycles, RVs, and commercial vehicles at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. Additional support provided by the members of the World Cafe affiliates nationwide. They include WUMB in Boston and WMUK in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Shows produced at WXPN from the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. I'm David Dye. This is The World Cafe from NPR.